Welcome to MaxQ, an interview podcast from Peabody's Launchpad office. This is a special release outside of our normal interviews with recent Peabody alumni. To engage with the current dramatic changes in our world, Launchpad director Dr. Zane Forshee is interviewing distinguished professionals in our field about the impact of COVID-19 on students in the performing arts.
In his first interview, Dr. Forshee speaks with trumpeter Sean Jones, the Richard and Elizabeth Case Endowed Chair of Peabody's Jazz Department.
Welcome to the show, Sean. I want to thank you so much for taking the time to speak with everybody today. My first question to you is like a personal one, which is, how are you managing your time right now? What's your life look like in the midst of all of this? And then how are you thinking about and preparing for future projects when a lot of things are uncertain right now?
Yeah, well, for me, life is definitely different. As I have a little girl now, she's 5 weeks old. So now suddenly all of my living is for them. And how that relates to how I want to project life and figure out what I'm going to do in the future. One, really taking the time to learn new technologies, really get into recording equipment, figure out how to make music remotely with varying organizations, reaching out to different cats to get ideas, to see what they're doing, learning from them, taking the best practices and putting them together and seeing how they work for me. I'm also taking the time to really polish my skills on the instrument, study different aspects of the music. And also I'm taking the time to just be still and get inside of myself. I think that's hard for people to do for some reason. Actually, I don't know why. Actually, I do know why it's hard to do. It's like everything is a projection. We're always online. We're doing this. Everybody's moving on to the next. And we very seldomly just sit and just chill and just be human. You don't have art without humanity. You don't have art unless you just, you enjoy the sunshine. You enjoy looking at the bird crawl through this this tree. So I'm allowing these moments to inform me and tell me what I am, who I am, where I'm going. And then from that, I can create music. So are there specific things that I'm working on? Yeah, I'm working on doing some overdubs. There's a very good friend of mine out of Utah. His name is Caleb Chapman. He's asked me to work with his organization to figure out different ways of playing live. So I'm doing that, just being as accessible for my students as I possibly can and being there for my family.
That's great. So you're really doing a lot of different things and taking as much time and advantage of the situation.
Sure. But you know, the thing that's interesting about it is that's no different from every other day for me. Like my life isn't, or at least my projection of life and what I want to do, it may be slightly altered by COVID-19, but it hasn't fundamentally changed who I am. I'm a hustler by nature. I go out there and get it. Because if I don't go get it, somebody else is going to go get it. And that's just the way that it is. There's this, you know, the saying, only the strong survive. That's real. So if you're sitting at home and you're just thinking like, oh man, what am I going to do? I don't know what to do. So the people that are thinking about what to do are the ones that will be better off when we come out of this. And make no mistake, we are going to come out of this. I mean, nothing lasts forever. Even if it lasts for 2 years, it'll be over after 2 years. And then what are you going to do? What are you going to stand on? Yeah. And from that moment, you will see who has done what to make things happen.
Well, kind of let's if you don't mind digging into that a little bit. So now that we've kind of seen, like in a short term sense, how the landscape has changed for artists right now with what's happening with COVID-19, what has gone away temporarily and what is new? How do you anticipate that the arts industry is going to change once we come out of this? Like, are you thinking about that at all?
Yeah, opportunities. I think it was already changing. I think it's just been, you know, like you turn on the TV and you push the arrow and it goes like 2, 3, or 4. It's just on 4 right now. We were already moving to more things being done online. We were already moving to overdubs happening remotely. It's just that the people that avoided it forever, now they're like, oh crap, I have to now get up to speed, which is why Sweetwater is running out of microphones. They're running out of these things. You know, everybody's trying to get Logic and everybody's trying to figure it out now. But that's where we were going anyway. Really, the only thing that has changed, per se, is that a live performances, obviously, or live, you know, displays of art aren't there for the moment. So what you're seeing is a lack of curation, if you will. The Carnegie Halls, the Lincoln Centers, all of the big spaces that exist that curate the quality of art aren't necessarily able to do it at the level that they were able to do it. So those organizations are being, you know, threatened a little bit. Also, if I had a fear, which I don't have a fear really, but if I had a concern, I would say is that the content of what's out there online is so vast now without true curation that the art could at some point suffer slightly because of that. Everybody can grab a mic and everybody can put out whatever, but that doesn't mean it's good. Just because McDonald's is on every other corner doesn't mean you should eat it. So I think it's important for those of us that have been in it for a while to politely curate these things and say, I don't know if that's up here. And at the end of the day, people consume whatever they want to consume, you know, but it's important for someone to say that someone that can't orchestrate at all, they shouldn't be comparing themselves to Mahler. Or if you can't improvise well, you know, you shouldn't be comparing yourself to Charlie Parker. Just because you can put a video up doesn't mean it's good. So it's our job to curate what that is, because right now, for the moment, those bigger avenues that we have in terms of curation aren't able to truly do their job.
Well, let's kind of talk about that for a second. As you're thinking about curation, what an artist does, the role of an artist right now, and especially the role of an artist in a worldwide kind of crisis, what do you think the role of the artist is now in the middle of all this?
The role of the artist hasn't changed. It's the same, and it will always be the same. Art is an expression of humanity. All of our senses. Our humanity is wrapped up in our senses and how we project those senses spiritually. And what I mean by spiritually is our connection to everything around us. And so the song will always be there. The flavor, the taste will always be there. The ability to touch will always be there. And the ability to see will always be there, because our humanity comes through that. And so we need to see things to be inspired. We need to create visual art. We need to see ourselves on campus and our mindset and our spirituality on canvas. We need to hear our thoughts through song. We need all of that. We need to taste. We need to do all of these things. So it hasn't changed. I think that certain things are magnified in this moment, and those things are the ability of the arts to heal, to provide comfort, to provide thought, to bring the temperature down. So I think we have a responsibility to do that. Also, the arts provide an avenue to express the need for social change. COVID-19, you can't ignore the fact that it's here because of human error. It's here because of human error. We messed with nature. Humans decided that we were more important than the natural order of things. And so how do you express that in art? Also, what the art has ability to do is just bring levity, make things light. When you get depressed, you put on your favorite record. When you feel bad, you put on your favorite song. So it hasn't changed, but those three fundamental things, I believe, are magnified in this moment. And, you know, someone asked me the other day, they said, well, who's there for the artist? Other artists. That's who's there for the artist. Just because you're an artist doesn't mean you have to be this island. I have to be so strong. No, you got to lean on other arts, lean on other artists, and they'll inspire you to create. We're all in it together. So I don't think the point has ever changed.
What can artists do remotely to create new opportunities for themselves now and in this future? I mean, you were talking already about the world is already, we've just hit four on the remote.
Right.
We're going faster. I mean, so where do you see, like, are you seeing that the real future here is in online and getting comfortable with technology?
I think that's a part of the future. It's there, it has been there, and more people are using it as a tool. But I believe that once we come out of this, I mean, the longer we're in this, the more we're going to feel like, oh my God, I need to see my neighbor. Oh my God, I need to go see a show. Oh my God, I need to go, I got to get out of here. You know, I'm not a religious person at all, but I grew up in church. I was in church all the time, and I used to drill scriptures in my head. And one of those scriptures is in Genesis, the first book of the Bible, and it says, it is not good for man to be alone. There's a reason that people have put millions upon millions of dollars behind concert halls and stadiums and venues and all that stuff isn't going to go away. It's not like the wrecking ball is going to come and tear down Carnegie Hall.
Right.
So it's going to be there. I think that it's going to be important for musicians in this time to make sure that we're still at a high level during this time by reaching out to one another, figuring out what cats are doing. What are you doing here? Hey, how did you do that? Humble yourself. You know, that's something that, you know, at this point in my career, it's like I realize how important that is, you know?
Yeah.
So I would say that artists right now, it's important for them to reach out to people. If they don't know how to do something, connect with people that know how to do it. If you're having a hard time reaching people, dive into the matrix, go online and check stuff out, read, get better at it, find a way. There is always a way. And maybe that's because I grew up in Warren, Ohio. We didn't have a lot, man. This doesn't scare me. I know how to survive.
You were figuring things out before YouTube.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Not just that, but even, you know, without economics, without money coming in, artists are scared half to death. Oh my God. Oh my God. Oh my God. What am I going to do? I'm like, man, you got internet. You got a phone. Survive. I mean, people have no idea what they can do with almost nothing. You can do a lot with almost nothing. You know, if you got a roof over your head and you can get food, you can make it. So having that mindset, like, I will not be defeated, I will survive. That's very important too.
And do you ever find, in that situation, you actually find yourself, when you are limited in terms of what you can get your fingers on, like, you actually become more resourceful?
Yeah.
In terms of how you get to where you want to go, and you actually discover a lot more?
Man, I used to have this kind of thought, and I used to tell my students, and I still do, I said, man, the times that I was most productive in my life were the times that I had the least. Like, when I was in grad school, man, I was constantly composing. I was constantly shedding. I mean, it was literally from sun up to sundown. Now that I have this job and I have all, you know, I have this stuff, it's like I'm kind of like I spend like an hour of every day trying to figure out where to put stuff. You know, like, oh man, I got, what do I do? Where do I put this? Oh, I got to put this. I got to organize this. I got to, because it's like clutter, you know? So I think in this time, as we have less to deal with, it'd be important for us to say, how can I maximize this little bit of stuff? Like if all you have is one glass of water, how can you maximize that? What can you do with one glass of water? If you only have five records, what can you do with five records? You know, if you basically exhaust every single limit of everything that you have. And if you only have one thing, exhaust the limits of that one thing, because that one thing through exhaustion will then propel you to realize that you actually have other things. So it's important to think about that. Also, waste. Man, it's funny. Somebody put online the other day, looking at the footprint from the carbon footprint from Washington, D.C. all the way up to Maine. And it is literally 70% lower. 70%. Think about that. 70% lower fuel consumption in certain areas. We don't need all of this stuff, man. We don't need it. And the only reason we consume it is because people tell us we need to consume it. They make us feel like it's needed to be important or valued or to have a certain level of existence in life. We don't need all that stuff. There's a difference between a want and a need. And I hope that people are figuring that out now. You know?
That's great. So really thinking holistically and a bigger picture around these values and then really pushing them together. A lot of that. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's what the arts are. Again, I'm with music, I'm always trying to get to the baseline, the why. Why do this in the first place? Why practice hours after hours every day? Why struggle figuring out where the next gigs are going to come? Why do this level of hustling? It's because the ability to put a piece of metal on my face and vibration come out to play a melody, you can't beat that. Like, for me, you can't beat it. I mean, maybe a chef that's really passionate about making the greatest dish ever, or the visual artist that's like thinking about the perfect shading here, or a dancer that's thinking about this pose that they're gonna stay there so long that you feel uncomfortable. That's where it's at for me. You know, because the money can go away.
Oh yes.
All that other stuff can go away. I don't need it. I can deal without it.
That's like a tide. It comes in and comes out.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's not hard to get. Money is not hard to get. You can monetize anything. Like I had a few students call me and also friends like, oh man, I don't know. I'm thinking about doing something else. I need to do something. I need to get money. I'm like, man, all you have to do is convince people that what you do can be bought. That's anything. You could go online and speak for 15 minutes and record 10 videos, 15 minutes. I guarantee you, if you put those videos up there and you say that this is what I'm saying and you should buy it for $5, somebody around this world is going to buy that. Even though you think it's nothing, it's easy to monetize things. it's not hard to get money if you think outside the box.
So I want to ask right now, while you're having some time at home, I mean, I also know because I follow you on Instagram and I always enjoy, as you know, your stories. But, like, what are you listening to right now? What's your sort of musical comfort food you've been kind of eating the most of right now?
Kind of everything, man. Like I have, like, this is like my music space. There's a big brick wall here. So those on the other side of the house can't hear what's going on. I just kind of listen to everything. And so I go and reinvestigate albums that I haven't gotten into as much. There's a band called New Birth from the 70s that I really get into a lot. Eddie Palmieri, some of his music. Like there's a group that he put together called Harlem River Drive that I really get into a lot. Kind of everything. I listen to my peers. I try not to think too much about genre itself and just listen to stuff that I haven't listened to. Brazilian music, Gal Costa, that's some stuff that I'm really, really checking out more. Just world musics in general, checking out sounds. So a little bit of everything. There isn't one real singular lane that I go to.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've for me, it's something similar. There's all these albums I've been wanting to get to, and now I'm just making time to like listen to them and really have the time to just sit there and listen. I don't know if you're experiencing this, but I've realized in our day to day that I haven't sat and invested in listening like I can or I should.
Yeah. It's hard to do, especially do what we're doing. We're always trying to, we're always teaching, projecting. We got kids. It's really hard to do. I tell students now, I'm like, man, look, while you don't have a bunch of bills and you don't have kids and a husband or a wife or a significant other, while it's just you, be selfish. Like, take it, because one day your time is not going to be yours anymore. So go down a rabbit hole. But again, going back to what I was saying earlier, scheduling is extremely important in this time.
Can you talk a little more about that? Like, how do you see that? How do you see that, like, as the Sean Jones of 20 versus the Sean Jones of today? Like, what is that? What do you see? What do you think are the things that you've changed? And then what are the things that, like, now, given your current life and the changes that have happened, like, how is that changing?
Yeah, the biggest change is just responsibility overall and how it has many different legs. Being at Peabody and taking on the task to run a jazz program, that's something I didn't have when I was 20. Having two kids and a wife, that is something that I didn't have when I was 20. different organizations that I have to be either on the board of or responsible for. I didn't have that then. So just the amount of time to contribute into one area, it's divided a lot now. Whereas when I was 20 years old, it was music, period. Music and school. So how that relates with time and scheduling, if students find themselves using the B word, and I'm talking about bored, you're done. The only people that get bored are boring people. That's it. If you find yourself, I'm bored, then you're boring. Like, you have no imagination. You don't have imagination and you don't have discipline. If you have discipline, you'll never be bored. Okay, so scheduling, some people don't know how to schedule, which I understand. It's kind of interesting to me that over the years, people just don't know how to maximize their time. And the way you maximize your time is you literally figure out what every single day is going to be like for yourself. And you figure out what every single day is going to be like for yourself by having goals, having projections that you want to put out there. One of the greatest assignments I ever got was when I was in 11th grade, 10th or 11th grade. And our English teacher just randomly gave us an assignment to write a letter to our parents, telling our parents what we'd be doing 10 years from that moment. So I'm like, whoa, what is that? And we only had 15 minutes to do it. Piece of paper, pen. Dear Mom, I wrote down three things. Dear Mom, I'll be a college professor, because I started teaching around that time at the local music store, and I like teaching. and I started to have interactions with college professors, and they all had nice cars, you know, that would work. And I was like, oh, that must be a good gig. They can kind of have a relatively flexible schedule. I like that. And I like music. So I'll teach music, be a college professor. Second thing was I would have my own recordings out. And the third thing was I would be Wynton Marsalis's friend. I wrote that when I was 16 years old. She still has that letter and it's framed in her house.
Wow.
So now I had a lot of obstacles to get there, a lot of failures. But I will say this, once I wrote that out, it became real in my hand and it set me on a path. And so I started to work backwards. Okay, 26, I want to do that by 26. What do I need to do? Okay, if I want to teach at a college, I need to have at least a master's degree. So I got to go to school. Okay, we don't have a lot of money. I got to get a scholarship. Let me get my grades up. I got to be able to play my butt off for some type of merit, you know, scholarship or performance scholarship or whatever. It's, I need a full ride. Who are the people that are getting full rides to college? And I started listening to them. Like, I need to be on that level. How do I get to that level? Consulted with a teacher. They were telling me to practice this at this time, do this at this time. And I started to think for myself like, okay, if I got three practice sessions in a day, one where I'm just dealing solely with fundamentals, two where I'm dealing with the reinforcement of those fundamentals, three, I'm dealing with the arm or the foundation of what I want my career to be, which at the time was jazz. If I'm having three sessions a day of that for, I don't know, as long as I could do it, which turned into being about an hour and a half per session. I think I can do this. So what I did was I started to create a log, and I would make sure that at this point in time during the day, I did my pedagogical routine. At this point in time during the day, I would do my reinforcement routine. And then at night, I would work on my musicianship, transcriptions, solos, all of that kind of stuff. And so over time, that turned into a regimen that I consistently did for years. And that I attribute to a lot of my success over the years in terms of being able to play with different people and perform at a high level. But whatever it is that you want to do, specifically in this time, it's real easy to lose track of time. Somebody the other day was like, what day is it on? Schedule. Every Sunday night is a great time. Sundays are great times in the week. It's a great time to reflect and project. Reflect and project. That's what Sundays are about for me. First half of the day, I'm reflecting. What happened last week? What were my successes? What were my failures? What can I do better? I'm thankful that I'm here. I'm thankful that I'm healthy. I'm thankful that I still have a roof over my head. Thankful, being gratitude, all of those things. Thinking about, again, successes, failures. But the latter part of that day, before I go to bed, I'm projecting. Okay, what's this week going to look like? Let me look at the weather. Let me look at what's in my bank account. Let me look at this. Let me figure out this. And so for younger people, they don't have to think about all of that kind of stuff. They can just simply say, okay, well, I'm not in school physically, but I still have some classes. When are my classes? Monday, this is the grid for my classes. Tuesday, this is the grid. Wednesday, third, all of that. And then plug in where I'm going to practice. Okay, I'm going to practice at this point on Monday. That's going to be this routine. This routine is going to happen at this point on Tuesday. This is happening. And then once you look at that, look at the grid, your week is booked. And it's like, oh, wow, my week is booked. And then you have to have the discipline to follow through with that every day.
I do have a question for you around that. So when you've had days, because we all have days where we're doing our schedule, have you had times where you have your plan and then you have to adjust because you're in a new phase? What do you do to recover when you've had like
you have everything planned and then a pipe bursts in your house, or you have to like change things up? How do you recover and get back on track? Or do you wash it for the day? What do you do?
Depends on what happens. If you fall down the steps and break your leg, that's it for the day. Your day's gone.
Sure.
So I think it's important in that moment to stop, be centered, and say, this has happened to me. This is where I am. This is my reality right now. And from that moment, I got this from Eckhart Tolle in a book called The Power of Now. And in one of the chapters, the heading is surrender. And I love it because he makes it so simple. He equates it to being in a car, right? I'm in my car and there's unexpected traffic. I left early for work. I know it takes me an hour to get to work. I left an hour and a half early. Boom, there's an accident on the road. Backed up traffic. You're sitting there. You got an important meeting at 10 a.m. You're not going to make it. What do? Do you honk your horn, scream? Do you get out pissing other people off, get into an altercation with people on the road to make your life even worse? Or do you sit there in your car and say, yes, I am in a traffic jam. Yes, I am not going to make it to this very important meeting. Yes, I have to call somebody now. Actually, not even then. That's a decision. Yes, this is not what I expected for the day. So acceptance of what has happened. Then from the acceptance, you can make logical decisions on how you want to combat that. Okay, I won't make it to the meeting. Let me call someone and figure out if I can call in. I'm on the phone. I got my phone in the car. Let me call in. Okay, they don't have the ability to call in. Well, at least I documented that I'm in a traffic jam. Can someone record this meeting for me? Okay, they recorded the meeting. All right, well, what do I have for the rest of the day? All right, at 1 o'clock, I have a little bit of time. I'll listen to the meeting in that time and I'll respond accordingly to what needs to be done. So you can recover, right? There's always the ability to recover from things and occurrences that happen to us in any general time. The important thing is to not stop. The important thing is to not say, this happened to me, so screw it, you know? And this goes to like an overall general philosophy that I have just about the nature of doing. I'm one of those cats that I'm always going to do something new. I'm always going to do something that, one, is very difficult that I've never done before that's going to kick my butt. And number two, I'm going to move on and do something else. And that's kind of like Steve Jobs' philosophy. The only way to be is to do.
Sean, I want to just ask one more question. And I really appreciate you taking the time to speak with us.
Sure.
Do you have any other kind of closing advice that you want to offer the students right now, or an alumni, and just students that are out there thinking about this time? Obviously, you've touched on some really great points.
Yeah. Two words. The first word is believe, and the second word is imagination. Nothing is ever of any significance to us unless we believe it and we make it matter. Nothing matters. Just on the floor. Zero matters on this planet, nothing. At the end of the day, we're all a blip. You're born and you die. 1,000 years from now, people probably won't even think about you. They won't even know. Maybe they will if you do something that's so earth-shattering that people remember you for 1,000 years from now. So why even live? What's the importance of any of this? You choose. You choose what matters. You choose what's important to you, and you live according to that. And from that, your life has meaning because you choose it to have meaning. And the way to do that is you have to believe in certain principles about your life, believe in certain things, believe that I am a musician. My role on this planet is to create art. Believe that my role on this planet is to plant trees, to do whatever it is. Once you believe that, then you can have the action or the thought to project yourself into actually doing that thing. If you don't believe it, there's no point in doing it. You have to believe, especially in this time. It's really hard to believe. Why am I in music at all? I can't go out and play anywhere. Yeah, but you can play at home. And you put that on the internet. That's a venue. You know, you can play for yourself. Your neighbors can hear you play, right? It's how you think. If you really believe that your purpose is to do this, then you will find a way to make your purpose known. You'll find a way to get your voice heard. And the other side of believing is imagination. I asked Wayne Shorter, I said, if there was one thing, we were on the road, we were traveling from the south of France up north. And I said, actually all of us said, Marcus Miller, we're all on the tour bus. And we said, Mr. Shorter, if there was anything that was the most important thing in the world, what would it be? And he said, imagination. And I said, well, what about family? Imagination. What about love? Imagination. And I said, how could you put imagination above all of those things? And he said, because without imagination, you couldn't appreciate those things in the first place. And that is 100% real.
I want to leave it there, Sean. Thank you so much.
Thanks, my man.
Awesome.